The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
All right, Carl, thanks very much. Welcome to the Halftime Report. I'm Scott Wapner, and we are live today from the Sohn Conference in New York City, an event that raises money for cancer research. It's the 29th year of this gathering, and we are so proud as a network to be a part of it. We're covering the markets, obviously, too. The Fed chair speaks in just about 10 minutes' time. Leisman will have those important headlines in just a few moments. We do have the investment committee with me as well here in New York City. Josh Brown, Kerry Firestone, and Steve Weiss are here with me watching the markets bounce back a little bit after the worst day, Josh, in nearly a month. So you got rates are rising, anxieties are too, yeah, as we're talking about rate cuts and maybe not as many as we thought. Bostic weighing in again. One cut this year he sees, and maybe in the fourth quarter.
You know, it's really interesting because when I take the market's temperature, one of the things that I really want to look at is just to get a sense of where RSIs are, where is the relative strength, what's overheating, and what is gaining momentum. When you look at the S&P 500, 7% of the S&P 500 components have advanced 3 days in a row. That's almost nothing. Like, the market is almost completely stalled out here. That's below the average reading, which is 12%. But keep in mind, as late as mid-March, that was at 45%. So we've had a huge move in the amount of stocks that are making highs, that are advancing, that are trading higher. The Russell is a different story, Judge. When you think about the Russell 2000 right now, you've got the average RSI at 52. That is a high that we haven't seen since February of 2023. So that rotation that a lot of people have been talking about, saying it's coming, it did come. And if you threw some names in your portfolio that are outside the S&P 500, you're not seeing that stall. You're just seeing an advance in a different area than what we've become accustomed to.
All right, I just want to keep teasing the fact that the Fed chair is speaking, and we're going to have the headlines from that in a matter of minutes, literally. So we'll see what that does to this market day. We'll see what it does to interest rates. So, Kerry, you have Canaccord today looking at futures and saying that we've got a possible selling opportunity presenting itself. Piper Sandler today says the S&P is vulnerable to a 5 to 10% pullback. I don't think anybody would quibble with that thought, that we're vulnerable maybe for a pullback of 5 to 10%, simply because what Josh said, we're overbought and we've been going almost straight up.
Yeah. So we're up 27% since October. And we're always vulnerable to selling. I mean, there's no guarantee the market's going to go straight up. I think the market is very concerned about where interest rates are going. That is basically what has driven the market higher, AI as well, but the belief that interest rates were going to start to come down, first in March, now in June, and so now, maybe not till, I don't know, September. I think that the ISM number, the manufacturing number, was hotter than expected. It was stronger, and GDP is stronger. So the market is grappling with whether it
ADP
prefers.
Today, right?
Yes.
You just keep building a case where the
stronger growth.
As some would say,
cuts.
Now good news is bad news.
Correct. That's what we're dealing with, and that's why we're stalled, I think, in this kind of wait and see environment.
Weiss, is that what it's all about? It feels like it is.
Yeah, it's so interesting because you have these two opposite forces. One's hoping for, as Kerry was alluding to, for the economic data to be weak, and the other's, you know, so you can get rates coming down. But the way I look at it, here's the battle. The battle is, will the strength of the economy continue to make a rate cut a non-event, essentially, right? So if the economy continues this strong, what's the difference if the Fed doesn't cut this year or cuts once this year? So that's really the debate. But here's the difference, as I see it. The longer rates stay higher, the more damage it will ultimately do to the consumer and to certain businesses. So I think that's sort of like short term. But that really is the debate going on, saying you hear it all the time. Except for a blip that we have like yesterday, when you see yields, rates really rocket up. I mean, what we've seen, the backup in rates has been astounding in the face of a market that continues to go up.
The best idea that you could hear is economy remains strong and the Fed still cuts.
Exactly.
That's the Goldilocks scenario that some are hoping comes to fruition right. for, in some reasons, what you said, that the Fed wants to almost preemptively make a move so that they don't cause unnecessary issues to an economy that they've managed to actually pull off pretty well.
But here's the very, very complicating factor, which is that as you see commodities rise, you know, not just oil, commodities across the board, and you see wage growth, you know, today in the report, new employers are paying 10% hikes to employers to bring them in. Then what does the Fed do? Is the Fed focused on inflation, and that's their primary focus, and care less about what they're doing to the economy?
What do you think happens, though? All right, so we're going to get the March non-farm payrolls on Friday.
Yep.
Let's say it's 216,000 jobs added is consensus. February, we added 275. So we're clearly calming down in the labor market, but still strong. If that number were to disappoint to the downside, is that bullish stocks or bearish stocks?
Depends what wage growth is.
Okay.
I think that's more important than
headline.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Say more.
Yeah, because it's inflationary. So if you're paying employees more, you've got historically low employment, right? Unemployment now. So it doesn't matter if it's 150 or if it's 250. It matters in, you know, sort of like for that moment at that point in time, but then you just have to look at wage growth.
Carrie, it's HSBC today who was saying it's the more important question now is if, not when, the Fed cuts rates. And I want you to listen to what Steve Cohen, obviously the .72 chairman and CEO, the New York Mets owner, said about his own expectations for rate cuts during his interview this morning on Squawk Box with Andrew Ross Sorkin.
I think the market expects three cuts. I think that's the number. I don't disagree with that. I think inflation's been, you know, somewhat contained. And I think, I mean, ultimately, what it'll come down to is that a true statement or not. The Fed thinks they, you know, eventually is going to come down to 2% inflation rate.
What do you think?
I think that's going to be hard.
All right, that's Steve Cohen there. So they've said they're going to cut before it comes down to 2% anyway, right? Okay. They're not going to wait until it gets to target. And we know that we're going to get cuts this year based on what everybody said. Well, what happens if Bostic is correct and you don't get any until the fourth quarter? Is that a problem for the stock market?
Well, I think it is. But Bostic is a guy who was really concerned that inflation was ever going to come down. So I think that it is likely, Steve Cohen is right, he was, by the way, extremely calm, and the calmest I've ever heard him. But if we have...
Well, you don't hear him very often.
Yeah, that's true.
This was his first time ever on Squawk.
For years.
So, you know, it's a different person.
Yeah, so I think that rates will come down, and he's probably right. They're going to come down, even if it's a quarter, quarter, they'll come down. And the economy is growing, and I think that scenario he's talking about is a fairly positive, not just a soft landing, but a growth scenario in which the market would be very pleased to exist in for a while.
Let's listen to what Tony Pasquarello told me yesterday, too, on Closing Bell from Goldman Sachs. I mean, he's still bullish on the market. The Fed plays a role in that, of course. Listen to what he told me.
I'm still a believer in the bull thesis. I think the economy remains strong. We're forecasting the better part of 3% GDP growth this year.
Okay.
That might be part of like the local complexity, by the way. A believer that the Fed put is alive and well, should they choose to exercise it. And then in the background, which doesn't matter in daily today, you've got the AI story and you've got the GLP-1 story, which we think have a lot of room.
Okay, so in other words, Josh, cut the noise out.
Yeah.
Right. The trends are still your friend. They're both intact, be it AI, GLP-1. The Fed is still going to cut. They may not be on your schedule. They may not be on the market's schedule originally, but it's going to happen. And that's really all that matters at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I also think we're in the first week of April. We're already looking at an above average annual return. If we were to get nothing from here, it's still a pretty good year. But I think we're getting more because the earnings story in the second half We might have to see estimates come down. They have been coming down since January. This is how it works every year, that seasonality. But once those estimates are done coming down and we start the beat and raise game again, which we're very good at playing, where we celebrate a company for putting out guidance, then they slightly beat, we celebrate some more, guidance comes down, then they beat that too. So that's the game that you're going to see in the second half of this year. And markets tend to react favorably, even though everyone is in on the joke. You have that as one leg of the stool. The second leg of the stool, even if you get one rate cut, the fact that a rate cut cycle is starting, good enough. The third leg of the stool, and I would argue this is probably the most important, you're seeing this labor market cool off to the point where employers can breathe, but you're not seeing it cool off so much so that this unbelievable consumer spending story has to go away. This could be with us for the end of the year. So those are the three biggest things to me.
Yeah. The rate cut cycle starting.
Yep.
That sort of trumps everything else in the minds of many. Quickly to you.
Yeah. And I'd say if you listen to the rest of Steve's interview, and I used to work for Steve, and he's one of the best, clearly, AI.
I'm going to get to that, too. And I'm going to play some sound regarding what Steve Cohen had to say about AI and productivity. But let me get right to Steve Leisman now, because we do have those breaking headlines from Fed Chair Powell. He is speaking at Stanford University. And what is he saying, Steve?
He says if the economy evolves as expected, it will be appropriate to lower rates at some point this year. But the Fed chair, speaking at the Stanford Graduate School of Business, says it will not be appropriate to lower the policy rate without greater confidence. Inflation is coming down. He cites the Fed policy statement in making that comment. He said the Fed has time to let incoming data guide its decisions. And the policy rate, though, is likely at its peak. That's the good news. Inflation, he says, has come down significantly, but it is still running above the Fed's 2% target. The job of sustainably returning it to target, quote, is not yet done. Then he talks about the recent economic reports on jobs and inflation. They have come in, he says, higher than had been expected, but they do not, quote, materially change the overall picture. So what he's looking for is he sees solid growth in the economy, labor markets rebalancing, getting a little less tight in the labor market, and inflation will be moving, as is forecast, towards that 2% target. But he cautions it is too soon to say whether the recent inflation readings represent more than just a bump on the road toward that 2% target. He has a section there where he talks about risks on both sides of the equation, both the risk of reducing rates too early and reducing them too late. But monetary policy is, quote, well positioned, he says, to confront both risks. The Fed decisions. He has a section in here where he seems to be addressing concern about political bias in Fed decision making. He says all of their decisions and analysis are, quote, free from any personal or political bias. And he goes on to say the Fed needs to avoid mission creep, and specifically in relation to its role in the climate change debate. So I'll leave it there, Scott, and basically say I think that Powell is very much repeating where he's been, although maybe just leaving a little bit more room for the recent inflation reports not to have been a bump here. But he still seems to be on track with this idea, sees inflation coming down, and it will be at some point appropriate to cut interest rates.
I feel as though now, Steve, there appears to be a real simpatico, if you will, between Chair Powell and the other members of the Fed, in that they're almost saying the same thing in unison now. We're not there yet. We expect to be there. We're going to cut. We're just probably not going to do it on the schedule we originally thought or the market's first thought. And we're just all going to get our arms around that idea.
Yeah, I mean, I actually tend to think there are a few interesting differences on the committee right now. And those differences concern how you digest the recent inflation reports. I think some saw them as more of a serious setback than others did. I think Powell is more or less in the camp of seeing it as a bump and believes inflation progress will continue, although perhaps slower. I think others see it more as a cautionary note that says, you know what, maybe I need to back off a little bit, or back sometimes way off where I thought I would be. Bostic this morning, you know, he says don't start thinking about a rate cut till maybe Halloween or Thanksgiving or even Christmas. He's in the fourth quarter on a rate cut.
Yeah, interesting. I guess we'll see in the commentary that's ahead, because we do have some time now. between, you know, now and when the next meeting is. Steve, thank you. Steve Leisman, our senior economics reporter. Market not doing all that much. You saw maybe a move higher initially in yields. They've probably come down a little bit. There's the NASDAQ for you. We're still at 0.33%. Weiss, I'll send it back to you. I didn't mean to cut you off earlier. So, you know, Powell's not really telling us anything we don't know, I don't think.
No, I think that's typically the case between meetings, that he keeps the party line going. But you're right. It seems like that the FOMC is coalescing around. You know, we're still ready to ease. We just need to see some more traction on lowering inflation and the economy remains strong. But if you want to go to what the rest of Steve's conversation.
Well, why don't I play that? Because, okay. You know, he was asked sort of, and you always want to get someone like Steve Cohen's view on the sort of general market, given everything that's gone on with AI and these other trends. Let's listen to what he said about the market at large, whether we're in a bubble or not.
I don't see it as a bubble. I mean, I think the markets are discounting some of what they think AI is going to do for companies.
You think it's discounting?
Discounting.
So you think that there's even more upside
as a
result of AI?
I my view is this is a really durable theme.
All right, so Weiss, he said we're not in 99, right? Because AI is durable, and he used those, that's his word. He talked about more productivity, more efficiency for businesses of all sizes, not just a firm like his, but firms and small businesses, large businesses, media. You're going to see productivity go up, efficiency, and all of that, and that's going to lead the market higher.
Yeah, and look, let me just give some context on Steve. So Steve, I'd stand by his desk. He would short the market at the top during the day, buy it, cover and buy it back and go long, you know, at the bottom and then do it all over again. And as the world's changed, meaning the game has changed, he's changed. So he's become longer term somewhat and not so much short term trading, so tough. So you got to pay attention. He's got the best information. He's got 1,000 people working for him, of which a large number of traders. He gets the best information from purely bottoms-up fundamental work. So when he talks about it, he's talking about that 1,000-person company that he has that is so technologically advanced, and he's saying we can see it do more.
Well, because he used an anecdote from his own company to make the statement that he did, but the broader theme of no bubble because this is durable.
Yeah.
And you're going to get productivity and efficiency increases, and that's going to mean a lot, and some of which isn't even in the market yet.
Look, you could say that there are stocks that are in the AI theme that have been behaving in bubbly ways. I don't think that anyone reasonable would disagree, but you can't really say that about the biggest AI company, NVIDIA, because how do you have a bubble with a stock trading 24 times forward earnings? It's pretty tough to make the case. The other characteristic.
But you just look at they look at the price action on the stock more so than the valuation. They're like, oh my God, the stock's up 81% year to date. And they're saying just based on price escalation alone, this is kind of crazy.
I feel you, but look at the earnings estimates.
No, I know.
Okay. Not in a vacuum is my point. But the other point I would make is you need capital markets to dance. You're playing the music, you want to call it a bubble, you can't have 36 IPOs year to date. It's just not what it is. So, and I'll give you something else. Over the last month, we took a look at what factors have been driving market performance. You'd be amazed to hear AI has nothing to do with it. The yield factor has outperformed everything. The highest yielding stocks are up 3% over the last month. Growth was the worst factor, flat on the month. Value was number two, low vol was number three. So that's a bubble? How? It's not. We're seeing broad-based rallies. 90% of the S&P advancing over the last month. This is a very different environment than bubbles past. Could we have one? We have a bubble? Sure, of course. It's possible. But let's not worry about things before they actually take place.
You want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I would just say that if you look at the S&P 500 across sectors, you find that the sectors have broadly participated in this rally this year.
10 out of 11 are positive on the year.
Correct. And there's nearly 100 names that are 52-week highs in the S&P. And so it's not as narrow as it was, even though four names represent 50% of the gain of the S&P.
Do we take what Mr. Cohen has said and what Pasquarello says? It's almost like Tony's point, broader, is keep your eye on the ball. Stay with what's working, these large stocks, maybe even your, you know, like Adam Parker would say, be overweight an already large part of the market. Is that the best strategy?
I think so.
Even with broadening in the last month?
Well, it obviously depends what you're long and what's been working for how long. But if you're talking about mega cap tech and the AI related names, you really are just the beginning. You don't see these kinds of transformations just take a week or two or a year or 2 years. This is a forever thing. You haven't even fleshed out all the business use cases for AI. So yes, you do stay long. However, on some of the others, maybe they're trading stocks. I mean, Caterpillar's had such a monstrous run, one that I've missed, by the way, that at what point does that extend the valuation to levels that it shouldn't? Josh's point, you've seen NVIDIA get cheaper despite
Apple's in a notable drawdown right now. One of the biggest technology stocks in the world, notably not part of whatever bubble people think they see. Adobe, this is a very AI-related stock. Looks like garbage right now, technically. Great company. There are a lot of tech stories that should be working if it is a bubble that aren't. And the reason why is because people are still paying attention to fundamentals. There will come a time where we stop and we just start chasing tickers. We've seen that. 2021, we saw that. That's just not representative of the way people are investing right now.
Let's take a look at shares of Disney because there is that big boardroom battle that we are keeping a close eye. There is a report out that Disney has secured enough votes to win the shareholder meeting. We shall see because we're not going to know for quite some time now. Jim Labenthal, he is a Disney shareholder. He joins us now quickly for his thoughts. If that is the case, Jim, what are you going to do? You've told us that you're not selling if Peltz doesn't win, even though you'd like to see him on the board. But now you've had 24 hours to collect your thoughts on that. Is that still the case?
It definitely is still the case. Obviously, Scott, this is a great drama here. You know, Wall Street titan meets a West Coast Hollywood titan. But when we wake up tomorrow, that drama is going to be over. And what's left is a company that looks like it's executing well. Now, let me be clear. There's a lot of wood for Mr. Iger to chop, a lot. He's got to get the Hulu transaction done. He has to figure out how to monetize ESPN. I keep saying I think he's got one ace in his sleeve. Now, I don't know this for certain, but I do think that streaming is that ace up his sleeve. He's said for the last two quarters it's going to turn profitable by the end of the fiscal year, which ends September 30th. And if you look at the contribution to the following fiscal year, it's looking like it's going to contribute something like 7% of operating income at current analyst estimates. That's a very small number. And my point is that an excellent manager like Mr. Iger knows how to squeeze costs and get that contribution, get that profitability from streaming. That's a variable that he can control, I think, and outperform on the estimates. If he does that, then this is a stock that's going to be worth the 22 times forward estimates that it's at right now. So bottom line is, let's get past this drama and keep executing the way Disney has been for the last several months.
Jim, we're going to keep it brief. I appreciate your opinion. We'll see you in person soon. That's Jim Labenthal on Disney. By the way, don't miss David Faber's exclusive sit down with Disney CEO Bob Iger tomorrow, 9 a.m. Eastern on Squawk on the Street. Won't want to miss that big interview. Speaking of well-known investors and activists and just big names in general, several are here at Sohn presenting today. Their best ideas for a great cause. Our Leslie Picker joins us now. And what we've already heard and what's coming up this afternoon. We're always here together. It's always a big, fun day for us to cover what's happening here. What have we learned so far?
Absolutely. So we just concluded the Next Wave Sohn speakers. And it's funny because I was listening to the presentations. I was trying to draw some kind of thread throughout these, but they span sectors. They span geographies. They span market cap size. So the first presentation we heard was a pitch for Along and Payson, which is a data management system for rigs. Then you had Couche-Tard, which is convenience store, basically a play saying that just because more consumers adopt EVs doesn't mean convenience stores will go to the wayside. You had a biotech pick as well as a Norwegian digital media company. So again, various geographies, various areas in terms of sector. But of course, you were just having this conversation about, you know, dispersion, stock picks, this environment. So it'll be interesting to see in the rest of the day when we hear from kind of the main event, David Einhorn, who I know you're also speaking with later this afternoon. always gives a humorous presentation at these events involving cartoons and makes it very enjoyable, as well as informative and interesting. You have Jesse Cohn from Elliot, who's speaking later today. Bridgewater is doing a fireside. And then I have a fireside this afternoon with two kind of momentum growth type TMT investors, Tech Media and Telecom, Josh Resnick of Jericho, as well as Leon Shalov of Maple Lake. So, again, spanning the gamut in terms of content here. We'll be sure to bring you the highlights.
Yeah, I love that. It's one of the beauties of this conference is that you're not getting presentations on the stocks that everybody's talking about every day.
Yes.
You're getting real interesting, actionable ideas, which is why we love covering it so much. We'll see you throughout the day. That's Leslie Picker. By the way, we'll have David Einhorn on 2:15 Eastern this afternoon with me for an exclusive interview, and I hope all of you will check that out after he gets off the stage and presents his best idea to the gathering here. Up next, we'll have more committee stocks on the move. We'll give you the trades on Intel and Taiwan Semi Booking Holdings, too. Halftime's back at Sohn in 2 minutes.
Are you following the Halftime Report podcast? What are you waiting for? Look for us in your favorite podcasting app. Follow the Halftime Podcast now.
Old Dominion Freight Line was built on keeping promises. With an industry-leading on-time delivery record and low claims rate, we keep promises better than any other LTL freight carrier because we treat every shipment like it's our most important one, which means we do the little things right so that we can keep our promises and you can keep yours too. That's what drives us. To learn how OD can help your business keep its promises, visit odfl.com. Old Dominion, helping the world keep promises.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit ssga.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
We're back at the Sohn Conference in New York City, hanging on to some gains in the market. There's Intel shares not up today. That's one of the stocks we're going to talk about. The company revealing why it's a $7 billion operating loss in the foundry business. You own this stock.
I do. Look, I mean, the story on the foundry is not about today. The story on the foundry is the back half of the year. And that's why it's holding up reasonably well. So with ASML,
you think it should be could be down worse than 7.5%?
Generally, when you report that kind of loss on a company that just has reported a lot of losses, missed a lot of numbers, like repeatedly, I would think people throw their hands up. And the stock could have easily been at 35 today as this. But people are starting to get to know. And by the way, it's not cheap on the numbers today and even on the numbers for 25. But those numbers will go up. Because as you get to the second half of this year, particularly the fourth quarter, you'll see the foundry business start doing a lot better as they make chips that can compete with NVIDIA. So that's why I own it as a companion stock, really an ASML. Look, it's a painful day.
You this caught your eye too. You don't own it, but the price action has.
Yeah, I expect to see this way worse. We've seen Intel really do nothing but disappoint on this fab business, really, I don't know, 6 or 7 years now. But here's the thing. It is absolutely essential that somebody in North America start standing up fabs and find a way to profitability. It's never going to be a great business. It's never going to be like designing chips or selling advanced lithography. Nobody expects that. But if Intel is talking about 2027 and the market is saying, all right, let's take 7% off, but that's it. $38 looks like support, at least in recent times. That was a breakout. That should now serve as support. So I'm going to watch to see if on this disappointment, the stock can hold 38. And if it can for a few days, I'm going to take a second look as a long idea because I think Intel is really making something very unique here out of this fab idea. And no other publicly traded company in the United States will be able to say that they can do what's being built right now.
All right, interesting take. You keep us up to date there. Taiwan Semi, too, Weiss, is in the news today because of that strong earthquake in Taiwan, the strongest in some 25 years. You have some talking about, you know, supply chain, minor impacts. That seems to be the overall tone from the analyst notes that I've read. You own this too?
I do own it, and this one is a very large position, and it's done pretty well. I mean, it was always ignored. My biggest concern with Taiwan Semi is not the fundamentals. We heard Jensen Huang come out and say, if only I can get enough capacity from Taiwan Semi. It's really the China exposure, because, you know, what you see in the headlines, China, yeah, they want to invade Taiwan, maybe, et cetera, et cetera. Like, Taiwan Semi has some significant facilities in China. So that, to me, is the risk on any story that's in China. But overall, it's still pretty reasonably priced. And guess what? They can't handle the orders that they get. So I really like this one. It's going to keep going.
All right, you want to talk Booking Holdings? Carrie, which you own, initiated a buy today at Riley, target 4,400.
Yeah, I think that's great. It's a stock we own, we like. I highlighted yesterday when I wrote my notes about what's going on in the market. This is a play on travel. And as we know, people are traveling more. The airlines are full. People are going all around the world. And the stock had a good year last year. It's still an inexpensive stock, trades below a market multiple. And, you know, the baby boomers are just traveling constantly. They're retiring. They're going to keep traveling. I know this for a fact. I'm one of them. So I think Booking's is a great idea, and I'm glad that they put this recommendation on.
All right, let's get the broader headlines now with Seema Modi. Hi, Seema.
Scott, here's the update. In response to Donald Trump's legal team's request to further delay the hush money trial due to pretrial publicity, the Manhattan DA's office said the judge should reject the request. In filings with the judge, the office said that the publicity was partly of Trump's own making. They also said that the media attention was unlikely to die down and an indefinite adjournment was inappropriate. Uber Eats customers may start receiving their orders from a Waymo self-driving car for the first time starting today. Customers in the Phoenix, Arizona area will be able to enjoy the service. It's part of a multi-year partnership between the two companies unveiled last year when Uber started to offer rides in Waymo vehicles in Phoenix. And the Metropolitan Transportation Authority is looking to collect a toll on the New York City Marathon runners. According to the New York Times, the MTA said the event's organizers must pay about $750,000 to have full access to the bridge, though in recent weeks, the MTA has backed off a bit and said that unless there's a payment, they can't use both tiers of the bridge. Scott, that's the latest. Back to you.
All right, to be continued there. Seema Modi, thank you very much. Up next from the Sohn Conference, an under-the-radar biotech play. StemPoint Capital's Michelle Ross just presented her best idea in that space. She joins us next to tell you what it is and to discuss. We're back after this from Sohn in New York City.
B2B selling is tougher than ever, and we feel your pain. If you're struggling to close deals, consider giving LinkedIn Sales Navigator a shot. This sales intelligence platform helps professionals like you engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator also guides you in targeting the right buyers, highlights key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and uncovers hidden hot prospects so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/halftimereport. That is linkedin.com/halftimereport for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/halftimereport and get started.
Welcome back. We're live from the Sohn Conference today in New York City. Joining us now to discuss her best idea, it's in biotech, is StemPoint Capital CIO and managing partner Michelle Ross. It's nice to see you.
So nice to see you too.
Thank you for sitting down with us after you got off the stage with this big idea, which is Crinetics. Crinetics Pharmaceuticals?
Yes, it is.
Tell us about it.
So Crinetics is really unique. It is the pioneer, one of the pioneers in an area of endocrinology. Endocrinology is how the hormones work through our body. But the really unique piece here is that the GLP-1 class that has moved into obesity and obviously diabetes is the basis of this endocrinology market as well. And we really do believe that the kind of opportunity set for GLP-1 adjacent companies is tremendous. And we talked about this in January.
Of course.
I think Crinetics is in a prime spot, independent of their own research in multiple endocrinology indications, to benefit from this tailwind as well.
Are we at that stage where we need to look far beyond the number one players in GLP-1 and we need to go to the, you know, as you say, the adjacents? Is that where you're going to make money now?
I believe that there's the kind of dual track opportunity. I think that the lead players here with Eli Lilly and Novo Nordisk are going to have a phenomenal opportunity ahead of them. But there's a lot of things structurally that are changing in this market. So in the next 2 to 3 years, we do expect an oral pill to come in and take the lead as the main way that this drug is administered. And that's an ability to grow the market. There are also side effects that are quite common. We've discussed muscle loss and, you know, nausea. We're going to see other companies produce drugs that are going to set up for that next wave. So believe in those first lead companies, but definitely believe that there's going to be those who want to step in and partake in a $200 billion opportunity. It probably won't stay a duopoly.
Wow. So Carrie Firestone, by the way, used to run the healthcare and biotech fund at Fidelity.
Wonderful.
So you know the space better than most. What do you make of the stock, the play itself, and how we should be thinking about opportunities to make money in a space you know so well?
Yeah, well, congratulations for owning the stock, because I just looked at it. I didn't know it until I just looked a few minutes ago, and it's been fantastic. So I would love to hear your view on these things. Is there a molecule in clinical trials that's oral? Do they have an oral? What stage, what phase are we at? And do you believe that eventually we can bring down the price, because everyone in the world, or half the people in the world, can be on it, but no one can pay the price?
Absolutely.
We're starting to bankrupt institutions who self-insure and can't afford to have all their employees take the GLP-1 drugs.
So the incredible piece about Crinetics is actually they are the adjacent to the opportunity, in the sense that there are 72 independent endocrine disorders that exist in the world. And ultimately, people are going to go into their physician's office and say, you know what, I think I'd like to be tested for a GLP-1 drug. And it will not be appropriate for them. There will be another endocrine disorder that they potentially have. 4.8% of the population is an undiagnosed endocrine disorder. So that's tens of millions of people. So really, you're actually benefiting from this tailwind of people attempting to, you know, partake in this opportunity. Now, Crinetics platform is what we're very excited about. They use a pathway where they are building oral drugs. So to your point on cost, absolutely. We think an oral is going to be a key piece of that market growth over time, getting the cost of drugs to come down, particularly in such an important area. And then the proliferation, which, kind of like statins that we saw when Lipitor came onto the scene, 1997 it launched. At this point, you have 40% of the U.S. adult population on a statin. We think that that market potential has applicability to GLP-1s. So if you're in the market as the lead players, or if you're ancillary to it like Crinetics, there's a tremendous opportunity here.
The holy grail, really, in medicine and research and all these drug companies is cancer.
Yes.
It plays into why we're here today, obviously, for this incredible cause that we're all helping, hopefully, to support. Merus is a company you're focused on, as well as Syndax.
Yeah.
SNDX, can you talk about that? Because it does play a direct role in pediatric oncology,
yes.
Correct?
Yes, and I said that this morning during my pitch. It's really phenomenal to be here supporting this cause and what they're doing. And Syndax, to your point, has filed with the FDA a drug for a rare form of pediatric oncology. It's pediatric leukemia, in fact. And interestingly enough, a lot of the early research that went on for this work, the clinical research, was right here in New York City, done at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, which was the 2023 grantee from the Sohn Conference. So I think there's a really fascinating tie to that, and we're incredibly optimistic about what that drug is going to do for patients and the long-term trajectory of that. And you did mention Merus.
Yeah.
Another company that we are incredibly focused on the long-term impact that they are going to have with patients who have head and neck cancer. Now, unfortunately, this is an area of cancer that has not been fully covered by the existing therapies in the market. There's a lot of room for improvement versus the existing therapy. By the middle of this year at a medical conference, we should see Merus's updated data in that head and neck cancer indication.
How many stocks do you own at a given time? And what is your broad view on just investing? For those who don't have the time to do the bottoms up research and are looking at the space more broadly, are you more optimistic about it now after a couple of tough years?
The twofold. I think the great thing about biotech, it will always be there, is how idiosyncratic it can be versus the general market. And I've been listening to everyone's comments early this morning. It is tough to want to be able to fight some of these bigger themes that are going on the macro level. Biotech will be tied to that because we are a long duration asset in totality. But when there is great data and when there is going to be a meaningful improvement in the health of our population and patients globally, that has an impact and can actually turn its way into, you know, a phenomenal outperformance. I mean, we talk about Crinetics over 2 years. They had a 200% outperformance versus the XBI, the biotech ETF, during those 3 years that were quite difficult. So yes, I absolutely believe stock picking, idiosyncratic nature, and themes, oncology being a great one.
Yeah. I appreciate the time very much today. Michelle Ross joining us here from the Sohn Conference. So we'll see you again. Thank you so much. All right, we'll have much more coming up from Sohn today. And another reminder about my David Einhorn exclusive interview, Greenlight Capital. There he is. He's going to be joining us at 2:15. He's going to take the stage about 1:30-ish, lay out his best idea. We'll talk about it. And the market's on the other side of that. In the meantime, your second quarter playbooks, they continue. Piper Sandler is out today with the stocks to own and stocks to avoid. Committee owns a bunch of the names, too, which is why we'll trade them next. All right, welcome back to the Sohn Conference here in New York City. Piper Sandler's out with a list today of stocks to own and avoid in the second quarter. Got some ownership on the desk. Okay, they like Microsoft. Breaking news.
Yeah.
Kidding. We're not going to talk about that one. We're going to talk about NextEra Energy, Carrie, which you own. Charles Schwab, you own as well. They say you should own both of those.
Yeah, well, both of those stocks were weak performers last year, and we own NextEra because they get a court ruling that's a positive, it's inexpensive, it's utility. It also has a big sustainable component.
Let's talk about some to avoid. They don't like your Live Nation.
Okay.
Josh Brown.
Okay.
You want to articulate once again for our viewers why you continue to?
This is, in my opinion, one of the crown jewel companies in the experience economy. So if you think the experience economy holds up yet another year, there aren't five of these. There aren't even three of these. There are two and only one is publicly traded. And they pretty much have a stranglehold on the thing that, one of the things that we want to spend money the most on, which is going to things live. So in this case, it's not sports, it's music. It's a huge, huge story how the consumer just has not backed off. A lot of people said, okay, 2022 is a reopening. People will get it out of their system. That's not the case. The amount of events is accelerating. The amount of money people are willing to pay because of dynamic pricing is accelerating. And Taylor Swift was a huge deal last summer. We're going to have lots of huge tours this summer. And that's why the stock's above 100. And I think we'll get a new high in relatively short order.
Weiss, they don't like Goldman here. And by the way, valuation, earnings quality, risk, sentiment expectations, governance, profitability, operating efficiency are the metrics that they use to go through these. But you continue to like Goldman?
Oh, I love Goldman. I mean, we're starting to see the IPO market open up a little bit more. And we'll see the secondary market. We'll see the private market. And that is high margin business. And that's what's going to drive it further. So I think Goldman, premier bank.
All right, we're going to take a look after this break at some winners and losers for the committee as well in the first quarter. We're back at Sohn after this. All right, welcome back. We wanted to take a look back at some of the committee's Q1 winners and losers this year. So we all know about Meta doing well and Amazon and Nvidia, which is, you know, part of ownership on the desk today. So I don't want to do those. I want to do health equity, Carrie, which you have, is up 23% in the first quarter. Still bullish?
Yeah, definitely. It's health savings accounts. So number one, you've had a lot of employment, so those employees can open their savings accounts. And also, interest rates are higher than they were. That's good for health equity. They have a lot of cash on hand. And if rates aren't going to be collapsing, which they're not, that should be good for the rest of the year.
All right. So we talked about, you know, Intel, Weiss, you having that. It's a bit of a laggard. ASML's up 35%. We talked Taiwan Semi. What about TransDigm? We don't talk about that a lot. It's up 24% in the first quarter.
It's a phenomenal story. It's essentially 48 separate companies that the management has been acquiring. And no matter what plane you fly, no matter who the manufacturer is, they've got a part on. And they've also bought companies that have a single part in the plane, and then they're able to raise prices. So it's a great story. It's going to keep going. It's a permanent compounder.
Archer Daniels down 14%.
Yeah, and I don't own it there. I bought it on the break. So I'm actually up 20% in.
All right.
And they'll settle the accounting
scandal. Still bullish?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm getting lucky now because the commodity tailwind, without that, it'd still be in the 50s. But they'll settle the accounting issue and then it'll be fine.
All right, good stuff. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with finals from Sohn next. Coming up 2:15 on Power Lunch, another reminder, our exclusive interview with David Einhorn here from the Sohn Investment Conference. He is presenting just about 30 minutes from now, and then he's going to come talk about his pick with me. We'll talk about the markets, too. But let's do final trades in the 30 seconds or so that we have left. Steve Weiss.
GXO, you haven't heard me talk about it. It hasn't done particularly well, but they do well each quarter, and I think a lot of outsourcing, it should work.
XPO's done great, though, right?
XPO's done phenomenally well.
Just talking about that yesterday.
Yeah.
Carrie.
Thermo Fisher, TMO, it's retraced a big move somewhat, so you've got a good buying opportunity. Healthcare, services, technology, great place to be.
I got Josh Brown.
NASDAQ, NDAQ, held up really well this week, going higher.
All right, guys, good stuff. Good to have you here at Sohn. I'll see you with Einhorn in just a little bit. The exchange is now.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime-report-disclaimer.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.